Merry Christmas, my beautiful brainiacs, or happy three-day weekend, whichever one applies to you. In addition to the new episode this week and the reruns of the last two Christmas specials, I've got something completely different for you now. This past summer, it was my pleasure to be interviewed on the Genuine Chit Chat podcast, hosted by an absolutely cracking chap out of jolly old England. We got on like a house on fire and decided to do an episode where we compare and contrast and explain the way Christmas is celebrated in the two relative, similar yet distinctly different cultures, as well as holding each other personally accountable for the nuances of that culture. I got to talk not only to the host Mike, but also to his girlfriend Megan. Megan has also lived in Spain and Italy, so she was able to broaden our horizons even further. And just like any good conversation, it does run a little long. Believe it or not, I took a bunch out, but couldn't bring myself to take out more than I did. So I hope that you have a lovely, safe, enriching day, and enjoy the show. Okay, to give you an idea of what my foundation of knowledge is in terms of British culture, British TV, not all of it, obviously, but my father and I used to watch Are You Being Served and Blackadder together. My husband and I watch a lot of British shows on YouTube, particularly QI and Taskmaster. Those are big, big favorites. But we'll see these things that are clearly important. They're clearly cultural touchstones that just don't exist in the U.S., or that we have only a vague kind of understanding on. And one of the big ones that my impression is you couldn't have a U.K. Christmas without it, Christmas crackers. Will you tell the folks on my side of the pond, what is a Christmas cracker?
I mean, Gladys, I was actually surprised to find out that I only found out for sort of vague research of doing the podcast with you that Christmas crackers weren't a thing everywhere else.
I knew that they weren't because of Italy. So I'm half Italian. So
and you've travelled. You've lived in Spain, well, and France, yeah, and stuff. But you've travelled. I'm just stuck. I've been in the same town in England for.
But in Italy they don't have Christmas crackers, and in Spain and France they don't have Christmas crackers either. So whenever I
But Italy has panettone, which makes up for a whole lot. That's like if brioche and cake had a sexy baby together.
Christmas crackers, yeah, they're a weird one. Whenever I used to go to Italy for Christmas, I used to take Christmas crackers with me, and my family would be like, I don't understand what this is.
So, well, let's explain it. So it's essentially a cardboard tube, probably it's a toilet roll, the plastic tube you get when you finish with a toilet roll. It's essentially that, but if it was sealed, so you've got a sealed cardboard cylinder, and then there are cardboard handles on it. Now, the cylinder in the middle is filled with three things, always three things, yeah. No more, no less. There is one tiny bit of paper that normally has some random bonus Christmas fact that everyone knows because there's only like 20 of them, and a joke.
And a Christmas joke. A really bad Christmas joke. Or a Christmas riddle of some description.
Okay, so it's a Christmas riddle. You normally get two of the three. And if you get the fancy crackers, if you get the really expensive ones,
oh my gosh,
get all three.
Some crackers, the prizes inside of them are absolutely cracking.
Oh god.
Am I right?
So you get this little piece of paper that has, as I said, all these jokes and riddles and facts that everyone's heard a million times, because there's only about 20 altogether of all of them. So you just get the same ones every year, no matter what brand you buy.
And then you get a paper crown.
You get the paper crown. That is, if you get the really, really, really expensive crackers that are like, you know, £20 for like six, or you get the really, really cheap ones that are like £1 for six, they will both still have the exact same quality crown. I don't know what it is.
And they will break immediately.
So they're made out of tissue paper. Yeah. So it's like the thinnest paper you could imagine.
And they're always really tight. They never fit on my head.
They don't fit on anyone's head.
And then inside you also get a toy. You get a gift of some description. The best one is the mini screwdrivers.
You get mini screwdrivers. Nail clippers.
Yeah, you can get mini nail clippers.
Okay, I was picturing Cracker Jack prizes, which I don't know if that has meaning
I don't know what
to
that
you
is.
Guys.
Okay, Cracker Jack is caramel corn and peanuts that comes in like an old-timey little cardboard box. And they were, their big claim to fame was that there was a prize inside, like in the cereal box. And just like with the cereal prizes and Happy Meal toys and stuff, they're getting cheaper and worse and less interesting over the years. So it might have started like as a an actual toy with moving parts, and these days it's a sticker.
Well, the thing is with ours is the difference is there's been no progression. So as in the the toys you get, I swear what happened is in like the 60s, there was this company that made Christmas cracker toys, crowns, and little bit slips of paper, and they supply every single cracker maker in the whole of Britain, and they always have done. They've never changed anything, because you could also get giant paper clips. You get
there's those little fish.
Yeah, the little fish that you put them on your
you
hand.
You put a fish in your hand, and then it starts curling up into different.
Yeah.
The thing is about Christmas crackers is that we haven't actually explained how you even use them. They're
cardboard
and then
you attach to the cylinder.
Yeah, then you hold it with someone and then you each pull so that obviously you're both pulling on it and then it breaks and then there's some sort of like
I don't know what it's called.
It's like a spark in there. I think it's like two bits. It's not gunpowder.
It's kind of
like
two. It's almost like two bits of cardboard stuck together.
Friction together and then they make a spark.
And you pull them apart
and it makes a noise.
Yeah.
And then the person who gets the bigger side wins the stuff inside of the cracker.
Yeah, so it's basically just cardboard handles on a cardboard cylinder. Both people pull the handles, and randomly one of you will get the cylinder on your end of the handle, and then you get that prize.
And I can safely say that it is literally never me.
It's always me.
I never win.
I always win them. People like to... The fun things at Christmas, especially when you get like a teenager who's been doing it for like... a few years, they think they've got the knack, and they're like, oh no, I know how to win the Christmas crackers, I've got this method. And whenever someone says that, 100% of the time, they will not get it.
Yeah.
They will not win. It's just one of those things. So you get terrible crown, terrible jokes, the gifts, they're not even presents. It's almost just
the mini screwdrivers are a gift.
They're great if you're moving out and you're young, but whether it was my parents who were like, you know, at the time when I was like 10, they were like 14, 50 years old. They've got so many sets of these.
Yeah, sometimes you can get a tiny, tiny little pack of cards.
Oh, yeah, small.
Such a tiny little deck of cards.
Like the size of probably your thumb. Like, that's the height of the cards.
I mean, are the mini screwdrivers, are they suitable for, like, eyeglass repair? Because that, for me, would be very handy.
Yeah, that exact kind of screwdriver.
Now, tangentially, when you're talking about who gets the bigger side wins... Do you guys do wishbones?
Yes.
After...
Mike and I literally did that yesterday.
Because we had a roast.
Okay, good. See, we have that in common.
Yay.
All right, well, let's ask you then something, because some of the crazier things... I think eggnog is the big one.
Yeah.
Because eggnog's the thing we hear about.
I mean, it's a thing... I think we have it here.
I think there's one brand of it you can get, and it's called Advocat. I think it's imported from, like, Poland or something.
Yeah, but I don't really know what eggnog is.
Nor do I.
Well, then it's a good thing I'm here. Now, eggnog, in its current state, you can think of it kind of like a holiday milkshake, because it's a very thick, rich, sweet dairy drink with all of the warming spices that you'd expect this time of year, like cinnamon and nutmeg. The stuff you can buy ready-made in a carton, of course, pales in comparison to making it yourself. And just like with fruitcake and Christmas puddings and things like that, where you make it way, way, way in advance, and it just kind of gets better with age, because a good eggnog should be really, really, really boozy. And it'll also keep forever, because nothing can grow with that amount of brandy or whiskey or rum, because everyone who's got an opinion about eggnog has their way of making it, which is, of course, the only way to make it. But eggnog actually has the same root, it's believed, as posset. That's kind of a set custard. The original posset was a warm ale drink with milk and spices. And one of the things about eggnog, it was for showing off wealth. Because to have all of this cream and fresh eggs and these exotic spices and the alcohol, you had to be doing decently for yourself, you know, middle class or better. So because it's got those warming spices and you save it for special occasions, it became tied to the holidays. Colonists from England headed to the New World, brought it with them, and then somehow it stayed here and then kind of just fell out of favor where it started. And now it's being regarded as a weird American thing. I'm like, No, we didn't come up with this. We might have kept it alive. but we didn't invent it.
We've evolved past it and you're still stuck in it. That's what I'm hearing here. Here's a question that links, it's kind of in line with the eggnog thing, so it doesn't count as a second question, sticking to that, is we often have, I don't know if you guys have, but Buck's Fizz. So we have it where I always had it. It
was, yeah, we have that at Christmas.
Yeah, so it's orange juice with a small amount of champagne and it, or Prosecco or whatever fizzy wine you desire. And it's basically...
That's a mimosa.
That's what a mimosa is.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, a mimosa is orange juice and champagne.
I didn't know that.
I don't know why you specifically call it a Buck's Fizz, but it is basically a mimosa.
Well,
yeah.
It's basically Buck's Fizz. It's meant to be called that because it's kind of like the equivalent, the wine equivalent of a shandy, but not quite a spritzer. It's like a wine spritzer, but fancy at Christmas. I just remember the only times I ever really have drank wine is when I was younger. And it would be Christmas morning and we'd have a meal or whatever. And then it would be, have a bit of Buck's Fizz. And I'd, you know, the amount of Prosecco or champagne I'd have in my Buck's Fizz was like, you know, quarter of a shot. Whereas my mum and dad would be more so half and half, if not more. We can't be like, no, if you drink in the morning, you're a savage. Well, what if you put orange juice with it?
Classy. but eggnog doesn't sound like my cup of tea.
I'd probably give it a go.
Well, it's not tea, it's eggnog. I thought we established that.
Oh, sorry. I'm just stuck on the tea.
Well, the funny thing is that we're neither really tea drinkers, are we?
I'm not a tea drinker
either. We're quite bad. Anyway, so questions more for yourselves. I mean, one thing I did want to ask is kind of, it's with Christmas and things specifically with kids being good and kids being bad. Do you guys, if your kids are bad, do you threaten them with... We used to get threatened with coal, and then I used to get told when we were younger we only used to get tangerines or oranges.
Yeah, we would get oranges and coal in our stockings if we were bad. Yeah.
But I don't know anyone who's ever had that. I think it was just threatened to kids in, like, the 70s. But, I mean, if it was in the 1920s, that wouldn't be a bad gift, would it?
No.
Do you guys have that? Like, a bad...
I mean, generally, when our kids are bad, we just whoop their asses. that's how we handle it. No, the coal, the threat of coal is absolutely a thing. The threat of citrus fruit, not as much. And that actually, that really surprised me on there because there was a period of time where that would have been a splendid treat to have in one stocking, to have some citrus fruit because it was still coming from very far away. You might get one, you know, and rather than just eat it whole, people would actually juice it and then stretch that juice out with sugar water, kind of making an orangeade so that they could enjoy their Christmas orange that much longer. So no, we don't threaten our children with groceries. We just threaten them with hydrocarbons. and you can buy candy, of course, that looks like coal. And half the time it's black licorice, which is at least as bad.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's licorice awful. Is one of those things where, obviously, in America you guys call it candy, and over here we call it sweets, because we're original and we describe things by how they are. That's why a drink is called bitter, which is also terrible. But with sweets slash candy, the thing is that licorice, if anyone says licorice is a candy or a sweet, they're a liar, because licorice isn't sweet, and therefore...
Yeah, licorice is gross.
I don't mind aniseed, but I hate licorice.
Look at Google Finnish candy. They have an affinity not only for black licorice, but they like it salty.
Oh, I tell you what, that's not just a Finnish thing. I went to Iceland and they had the exact same thing.
It must be a Nordic thing.
Yeah, it's Nordic, because I wonder if like licorice or aniseed or something, that maybe, because licorice is a root of some
maybe
sort.
It just grows there and nothing else does.
Oh yeah, because it says here in Finland, Finland has basically the most prominent... some of the most prominent licorice factories, I think it says. So it is weird that in Nordic countries, because when I went to Iceland a couple of years ago, I remember, you know, you go in the shop and you want to try all these crazy chocolates and things, and so many of them had licorice in. It was baffling. They'd mix like a whole little mini section of just licorice infused chocolates and sweets.
No, it's just ruining chocolate and other goods. What was I going to... Crap, I had a bonus... Oh, yeah. Bonus fact. In Iceland, there are dating apps specifically to warn you if you're about to date someone you're related to.
What?
Because the population of the country is so small.
That's crazy.
They actually need an app to warn them you're actually second cousins with this person.
Yeah, because there's more sheep.
Yeah, there's like 250,000 people or 500,000 people in the whole country.
Yeah, yeah. It's literally in the city that we live in, Southampton, we have 230,000-odd people living here. And I remember seeing some sort of plaque thing in Iceland, as you're right. I think it's around 250,000 people in all of Iceland. And so Iceland is way bigger than England. But if you think that a medium-sized city in England has basically the same population as the whole of Iceland. It's
that
just
is crazy.
It is mental.
Well, every day's a school day, what, guys?
Wait, if you listen to Moxie's podcast, your brain on facts.
It's kind of my thing. All right, okay. My next question, and this is something I just learned the existence of in the past week. You guys put a flag on the Christmas tree?
I didn't know.
I've never put a flag on a Christmas tree.
Mm. Okay, maybe it's a generational thing then,
It might be northern. Not to be rude to our northern fellows, but there's quite a few random English traditions where they've continued up north, but not down south. And obviously, we live in Southampton, so it's fairly quite south.
I should hope so,
yeah.
By the name.
Well, to be fair, Northampton's only in the Midlands, so, you know, it makes no sense. There's no Wolves in Wolverhampton either, which is upsetting. But yeah, there's English. Sorry, Megan's just she's on the phone.
I'm on the phone.
No, I should have just said just Google searching a flag on the Christmas tree, and it's just coming up with loads of Union Jacks. I don't think I've even seen anyone even put anything Union Jack.
I've never seen anyone put a Union Jack.
I only saw the one reference to it. I think it was on QI.
I do want to say, though, as well, QI is one of the greatest TV shows ever, and I thank
it's
you
amazing.
For watching it.
It's the best, and I was worried I wouldn't like it when Stephen Fry left, and then I absolutely fell in love with Sandy.
She is great. I think also with the flag thing, I mean, at the top of our tree at the moment is a Mario star, so from Super Mario, because we're massive nerds, but mainly we have angels.
Oh, I can out-nerd you.
Can you?
I have a Futurama-style Xmas tree.
Oh,
we actually have an artificial palm tree with lights on it.
That is incredible. Yeah,
we had a Hypnotoad wedding cake.
Yeah, I remember you saying Futurama is one of the reasons why I end up getting us watching more.
Speaking of Futurama, I used it in my PowerPoint the other day at school.
Nice.
Because I was teaching the future tense.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God. British wit.
But regarding the flag, so I've Googled it. So it started in the 1800s. So it was to do with glass ornaments being imported into Britain from Germany, becoming a status symbol to have glass ornaments on your tree. And then the more that you had, the better that you had your status. And then because the British Empire was growing and the most popular tree topper was the Union Jack, which is obviously the nation's flag, sometimes there were flags of the Empire and flags of the Allied countries, and trees ended up becoming very patriotic.
Well, down south, we're not very patriotic.
I guess it's less of a thing now because, like, I don't know.
I think it's just with the south of England, if for any people who don't live in England, I've described it many times on the podcast as it's the general stereotype of the south of as in the south of the United States, you know, the southerners, the stereotype of them being less educated and more backwards socially, and the more northern parts of America, you know, being more progressive and whatnot. In England, it's basically the same stereotype that's swapped.
It's reversed, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because the south was more agrarian, and the city centers, we had more large city centers in the north. It's a reverse England to the U.S., North versus South. But one of my favorite moments on the Great British Bake Off was they were setting up the Jaffa Cake Technical Challenge, and Paul Hollywood dunks his Jaffa Cake, and Mary Berry's face just falls. And she gathers, all this happens in a split second, but her face falls, and she gathers herself again and just says, "We don't do that in the South."
She's correct.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't like Jaffa cakes anyway, but she is
wrong.
Correct.
Okay, now hold up. Back to truck up. What?
She doesn't like chocolate orange.
I don't like chocolate orange.
Which is wrong.
And also, they're not a cake. They're a biscuit.
No, they're a cake.
They're a Jaffa cake.
It's absolutely a cake. They went to court over that.
Oh, yeah, they did.
It's a cake.
I'm wrong.
You are wrong.
Yeah.
Because anyway, they're gross.
Wrong.
Apart from the way that it's leavened, when it goes stale, it gets hard. Whereas,
And
don't get me started with the way the British English treats the words biscuit and pudding. It causes much confusion.
I was so confused when I came to America. And so I stayed with my friend Mary, who is from North Carolina. And they offered me biscuits, and I was like, yeah, sure. And
there should have been a pamphlet.
And then I had these like things that look like scones.
they're like scones, less dry, and they should be served with a sausage gravy. Otherwise, there's really no point.
Yeah, here's
unless
the other thing.
Unless you're having fried chicken, then it's good.
Yeah, because then gravy for you guys is a different thing as well, isn't it? Because what color is your gravy?
brown.
It depends on what you made it out of.
Yeah, because here, gravy...
Because you can have beef gravy, turkey gravy, sausage gravy.
I've seen a type of gravy. Is it?
And in fact, Italian-Americans call red sauce, they call, red pasta sauce, what you guys call bolognese, they call that gravy in like New Jersey.
Yeah, there's... Oh, so that's the sausage gravy that you're talking about. So yeah, I've Googled it. It's like this weird beigey color.
Well, it's a milk-based gravy. So you brown up some crumbled sausage. Make sure you got, some black pepper and some red pepper flake. Remove the sausage. Add, depending on how much grease you have left in the pan, add an equivalent amount of flour. Give it a good whisk. Let it cook off for a minute. And then add in some milk and let it thicken. Put the sausage back in. Pour it over those biscuits and you're good to go.
It's like scones and soup, isn't it?
The biscuit thing still throws me off. I mean, I remember when I think it was an episode of Family Guy or something, and they were like, oh yeah, let's go to KFC and get biscuits. And I was like, wait, what the heck? What? I was like, biscuits at KFC? What is that? Because obviously we are biscuits.
Our biscuits are your cookies, no?
But we have cookies over here.
Yes, yeah, but sometimes you use biscuit to refer to cracker, what we would call a cracker, like a water biscuit. And a friend of mine from, he was originally from Gravesend, Kent, he said, basically, if it shatters in your mouth and cuts up your gums, it's a biscuit.
I mean, yeah. We crackers as well. But it's basically, crackers are basically just salted biscuits that generally go with cheese.
Yeah.
Whereas a biscuit is generally sweet and often has chocolate or butter, a lot of butter in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, biscuits are great.
Okay, is the word cookie then used in common parlance for...
Yes.
Cookies are different to biscuits.
Well, no, but cookies are a type of biscuit. So we've got two variations. Yeah. So there's a brand called Maryland that do the most popular biscuit cookies here. It's basically just a circle of your cookie, but it's chocolate chip. So it's a chocolate chip cookie. And that's the same over here. Our cookies are a chocolate chip cookie. But the thing is that when we have, say, a cookie without chocolate chips in it, that's just a biscuit. That's not a chocolate chip cookie. So... It's a weird, very slight difference, but also cookies, if you get bigger, you never get a giant biscuit, but you can get giant cookies. So like a biscuit is normally, this is so stupid,
I realize how ridiculous
our bloody country is. Everything
sounds bad when you explain it out loud.
Yes. So a biscuit, if you make like a circle with your thumb and forefinger, that's the size of a biscuit. But a cookie can be anything bigger than that. So you can get cookies, the size of your head. You don't get a biscuit the size of your head. That's madness. If a biscuit becomes the size of your head, it becomes a cookie.
I mean, that's...
Okay. No, there are so many rules. I can't even keep up with this. This is awful.
That is
okay. So you've got crackers and biscuits
and cookies.
Yeah. Well, this is going to lead us into the other confusing nomenclature. And first, I want to lay out for you everything that I know, and then you can put everything in the correct place regarding the word pudding. Now, most American children will learn at some point that, in England, pudding means dessert, whereas pudding here means custard, typically, comes in a little plastic container in your school lunch, nice. Or you made it from a box mix, pudding. The word custard does get used in the U.S. sometimes, but typically we're talking about pudding. But then I thought, and so we grow up thinking, okay, in England, pudding means dessert. And then we start watching British shows. They're like, oh, okay. So now pudding is a steamed thing made of beef fat with vegetables on the inside?
Yeah,
what the fuck is this
that's
even?
Delicious. That's what it is. Suet
and
pudding,
so pudding
is delicious.
So pudding can be your dessert, or it can extend to include haggis. If you're, a Robbie Burns fan, can you please, just as you laid out cracker, biscuit, and cookie for me, how the hell is the word pudding used?
I honestly don't really understand why we have so many uses of the word pudding, because Mike, we were watching the Great British Bake Off recently, and Mike didn't realise that suet pudding was he didn't realise that that pastry was classed as a pudding.
I don't really know what it is.
I don't really get.
I'm uncultured. This is why Megan's with me. You can tell by half of the stuff. I just kind of ramble about nonsense. She
yeah, but I don't really know why we have the term pudding as in a dessert, and then also have it for like steak and kidney pudding, which is like kind of like a pie, really.
Yeah, and then Yorkshire pudding, which we do have here to a lesser extent, but they're called popovers.
Popovers?
What, because they
popovers?
Because they pop
at least in the part of the country I grew up in, they were called popovers.
Is that because the batter pops over the casing you put it in when they're done?
I'm assuming so. It was so cute, I never asked any questions.
I mean, Yorkshire puddings I'm very familiar with. We had them the other day, actually,
we
as
had
well.
Them
I
yesterday.
Have always questioned why. I just thought Yorkshire puddings were called puddings because they're made out of, like, a pastry.
I guess it's because they're made out of a batter.
Yeah, and batter. Yeah, but then batter.
And their batter is made
but
into
so
cake.
But so are pancakes.
Yeah.
We don't have the answer to this, I'm afraid.
No, we don't. Okay. And also, your pudding is a chocolate mousse. Because whenever I think of pudding in America, I think of, like, pudding cups, and I've seen them in, like, high school films.
Yeah, and that's...
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. It's not moussey, though. It's not fluffy or aerated.
Isn't it?
Is it more poopy?
No, it's like just... Yeah, just like straight custard.
But you can get chocolate flavor.
Yeah, you should get chocolate. I don't know why you would bother with anything else. Except the butterscotch. The butterscotch snack pack. Now, that's a blast from the past right there.
I mean, normally we do say dessert. Normally pudding, the term pudding is almost like a infantile way of saying dessert. Like,
hey,
kids
now.
Kids say, you know, do you want some, yeah, I want some pudding. But kids don't say they want dessert.
Always say that you have pudding after you've had, like, a pub meal.
No, pudding is at a pub.
Why are there so many rules?
And why do we both know them exactly the same? Even though,
it's like those language rules, the things that make up your language that you're never taught, but if somebody said it differently, you'd be like, well, that's not how that works.
We love that, because Megan's a languages teacher, so there's, we
oh,
always...
Oh, there you go, so you know.
Yeah. My favourite one, as an example, and everyone listening to this can, in theory, speak English, and it is, you get rough, you put a TH
it's
in front
o,
of it, and
the
it's
O-U-G-H
through,
spelling.
And you put a THO in front of it, and it's thorough. So you've got thorough.
Oh no, this language is absolutely mental.
It's great. Really
it is only exceptions and no rules, and I have huge respect for anyone with even a passing fluency in the English language, because it's absolutely mad.
We've just, like, made up our language and stolen it from
Latin
other people.
And French and German. Yeah. I mean, we've got all the Latin languages.
Oh yeah, no, I did. I got a whole thing about that in the Your Brain on Facts book. It's called Surprise Polyglot, and yeah, the English doesn't borrow from other languages. It knocks them out in dark alleys and goes through their pockets.
Just rummaging through those random little words that no one uses. Hey, let's have center, RE. Why is that? No one knows.
Oh, well, then we can get into the language simplification movement in the U.S., which is when we stopped spelling words like color and neighbor with a U that had no business being there in the first place.
Yeah, but then also we've got, like... One thing I always find funny is your guys' use of H's as well, which is whenever people say, no one in America says herb, they say herb.
Oh, yeah.
So why don't, if you're so, you know, if you guys are so strong-arming and removing the U, why don't you remove the H as well? Just say herb anyway. Yeah.
My father's name was Herbert, so I'm on both sides of this issue.
Sorry.
Because you see, he was a herb. We need the H sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he
there
wasn't a piece of basil.
The exception. Oh, yeah. Basil.
Oh, yeah. Basil. That's another thing.
That's
well.
Another thing.
Oregano.
Yeah.
But you do say zucchini.
That one's the same.
You say zucchini, which is the Italian
it's
word
the
for
Italian
courgette.
It's the Italian word for courgette.
Because obviously,
yeah.
I assume when a lot of the Italians went over to America, when you guys sort of. What's the term? I say colonize, I guess.
Migrated.
Is probably the term. Yeah, migrated, colonized.
Yeah, when there was a large influx of Italians in the. Late 19th century. That could have been when the word zucchini took root here. It is definitely when the hero worship of Christopher Columbus set in, because the resident English descended people who had been looking down on the Irish now had people they considered to be colored to look down on. And so the Irish kind of got bumped up. They got promoted. Because now we're all looking down on the Italians and the Sicilians. So the Italians were like, oh, but Columbus discovered America, one of us. And that's how we ended up with this hero worship that we're just now starting to undo. See, I had assumed that the word had been zucchini, and the British used the French word to avoid using the language of your enemy from the Great Wars.
Hmm.
It could be, but then again, we do...
It's just so weird, though, because Italian and French both derive from Latin, so it's surprising that they don't have a similar word anyway.
Well, is courgette some sort of derivative near a cucumber? Like, what's cucumber in French?
Cocombe.
So I wonder if... maybe if courgette and cucumber, because they're the same sort of genus of plant, I think.
No, they're completely... completely different.
Really?
Yeah, it's a zucchini is a squash.
Yes.
Yeah, you have told me
it's
that
a
before.
Summer squash.
Yeah.
That's mental.
And a cucumber is a berry.
It's a berry?
Everything is technically a berry. A watermelon's a berry. It's crazy. It's strawberries are not on the though.
Seeds
on the inside make it a berry. So strawberry is the exception.
Well, seeds on the inside make it a fruit, and then there's some other characteristics. Green peppers are berries. It's and bananas are herbs. So it's ridiculous. But we don't even need to get that.
Do you have parsnips?
Oh yes. Now they're not as well known as they should be, but more and more people are. As the foodie culture has been such a thing for the past 10 or 20 years, more people are discovering parsnips. I love a parsnip.
Yeah, I love parsnips.
They're like Christmas. So good.
They're a Christmas food for us. And the reason I asked about it is because, again, in Italy, they don't have parsnips.
Oh, shame.
I know. They're losing out. I think my dad used to sometimes take some back in the in his luggage with him. But yeah, parsnips.
If we keep on the sort of Christmas theme, just because of what you just said there. So for Christmas, I was interested that in America, do you guys have any non-religious pre-Christmas traditions? So for example, I think over here we don't really have any, except I know some people on Christmas Eve will open one gift. And normally,
that's a very European thing.
And normally it's also on Christmas Eve people get really, really drunk. But I think that's just a seasonal, that's just any excuse to get drunk thing. So I want to ask pre-Christmas, and then I want to ask about food as well. Do you guys have any sort of weird rituals, I guess you'd call it?
I don't know that there's anything that is so widespread as to be viewed as the American Christmas Eve tradition. It varies so much regionally, culturally, and from household to household. Like in my house growing up, I was one of six daughters, and we would do Secret Santa amongst the sisters, and you'd have $5, because we're small children, you'd have $5 to buy your Secret Santa gift, and that was the gift that you got to open on Christmas Eve to kind of try to tide us over
until
the next morning. But we are on my mother's side. Her family's from Czechoslovakia, and they have a Christmas Eve feast called the Veleja, which has to have an odd number of courses, no meat, and you start eating at when the first star is visible in the night sky, and you always leave a seat empty for the Christ child. He has stood us up every year, but we leave the chair open. It's like at Passover Seder, leaving the chair for Elijah. So that's how my family does, but now I would suspect that even between my household and my sisters, now that we're all grown and half of them have children, you know, it's going to be a completely different scene on Christmas Eve than it was for us growing up.
Yeah, I think that's the same here, to be honest.
Do you have anything crazy in Italy, though?
The thing with Italy is that I don't really remember Christmases out there because I was so young.
I know you've mentioned before, but there's the Day of the Kings, but that's nothing to do with Christmas, is it?
The Day of the Three Kings is Epiphany, is the 6th of January.
It's Epiphany.
Yeah. Right, yeah. That's when a lot of people in Spain, Italy, and France get their Christmas presents, because they believe that the Three Kings bring presents to them because they brought the presents to Jesus.
I knew some vagueness.
But that's not a thing for us because we're not a Catholic country.
No, we're not. We're just this weird...
And we can't be asked to wait.
Yeah, exactly. I want presents on Christmas.
So speaking of waiting, when, generally speaking, do people do their decorations?
So this year, people did it earlier because 2020 sucked.
Because we needed it, yeah.
I would say generally, most people, the first or second weekend in December, that people put their trees up.
Yeah, it depends when the 1st of December falls. Like, if the 1st of December falls on a Monday, it's always the weekend before
that.
Yeah,
it's normally the weekend.
So it can be 28th, 29th of November. If the 1st is, midway through the week, like a Wednesday... It's normally, I'd probably say more, like Megan said, kind of a week or so before Christmas, but it's never, I can't say I've seen anyone with mid-November or anything.
Know someone that put their tree up this year before Halloween.
That's sickening. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. I'd say after Thanksgiving in America is when people can put their Christmas
decorations. I mean, we put our tree up this year on the 29th of November.
But that was a Saturday, wasn't it?
It was a Sunday, and we were planning on putting it up on the 1st of December, but because it was midweek, we just decided to put it up slightly earlier.
It's normally the month of December, and then you've got a certain amount of days after, I think.
It's the 12 days of Christmas.
Oh, it could...
See, we always took ours down on January 6th because that was
the last day,
the 12th day of Christmas. Yes, that's when we took ours down. I suspect my mom will leave hers up rather later this year, it being such a difficult year, all told. there's a lot of people in the U.S. will put theirs up after they've cleared the table from Thanksgiving. Like, some people go immediately into Christmas.
Christ.
And normally it bothers me, but this year, whatever you need to do to get through this year,
yeah,
it's fine by me. It's A-okay. I am sticking to my family's tradition, which is putting the tree up very late, because my father had grown up incredibly poor, like no carpeting on the floor. Like, so far on the wrong side of the tracks, they couldn't hear the train. Like, really, really poor. And so they would go to sleep in the Christmas Eve, the living room looks normal. They wake up, and there's a tree with decorations and presents. So the tree was part of Christmas morning for them. So the earliest my dad would ever let us do it, I think one year, the 20th, was the earliest we could talk him into it. Because he had to assemble the artificial tree. So it all kind of hinged on his willingness to do it.
Yeah, with us, it kind of depends, because I don't think there's like a specific hard and fast rule, but usually normally the first 2 weeks in December is when the majority do. But also people do put their presents under there. So it kind of, once people start gift giving, more so when you're a child, like when I was younger, my parents would be really on the Christmas tree, because then when you start getting Christmas gifts from people, you know, your gifts go under the tree and you can stare at them and, oh my God, I'm so excited. And then, you know, when I became a teenager and kind of became angsty and apathetic towards happiness, it just meant I wasn't as excited about Christmas, and therefore they didn't bother to put the tree up quite as early.
Yeah, I also think it depends, like you said earlier, Moxie, about the different households. Mm-hmm. I think it's respective and different traditions within different people's households. Like, I know that my friend, her family always put the Christmas tree up on the 16th of December. And so, like, it's just that's what they do in their house. I mean, in my house, there's never been a specific
day. We've never had a specific day.
It's just kind of when we can be bothered to put the tree up.
That's what I'm like. This year, I was like, I can't be arsed. And Megan was like, I'd like to do this day. I was like, okay, I'll do it whenever you want.
Just, they're all equally good. Just whenever you feel like it.
Yeah.
And so,
Go on to your next... Dude, I love how we have this list and we've looked at it once.
Yeah.
I am ready to answer what I consider to be the big cultural question from your list. See if you can guess which one I think is...
Is it the one that you highlighted?
Is it the one that you've highlighted? Is it the Hallmark Movies Chas Channel?
I might have moved my cursor.
That was...
Cheaters.
We should have not said anything. We just said really clever.
My mum goes absolutely nuts for Hallmark movies.
I didn't even know
she
what they were.
Will watch them like year round. She goes absolutely crazy for watching American
people,
like cheesy it. American Christmas movies.
Elaine and Beth from work, as soon as it gets to like December 1st, once Netflix unleashes the tidal wave of crap Christmas movies, Hallmark Christmas movies, and really old school ones, people just go mental for them.
There's like ones with like actors that you like knew from when
they
were younger.
All the same.
Yeah.
They're all the same. And I nothing against your mother. I don't know her. I'm sure she's a wonderful woman. You seem lovely. I'm sure she's great too. Hallmark Christmas movies are for basic bitches. Just generally speaking, they are for the Prosecco brunch set. They are for the hashtag Starbucks crew.
The people that get the spiced pumpkin lattes.
Spice. Now, admittedly,
I do like them.
That is some good stuff. But you're basically just drinking pumpkin pie custard at that point. It doesn't, you know, there may or may not even be coffee in it. I can't confirm. But it's really pretty good. Everybody's got to have it once. Okay. But, The thing with the Hallmark Channel, and it was started by the Hallmark Greeting Card Company, which is probably why everything is so schmaltzy. Just so... for those who don't speak Yiddish, schmaltz refers to chicken fat, and the word schmaltzy refers to something that is overly rich. Also can apply to things that are sickly sweet or just completely overdone. And that would be Hallmark Christmas movies. In 2018, I did look up a few facts. I prepared a little bit. Ooh. Between the two Hallmark networks, who knew there were two of them? They shot 37 movies.
Is that just specifically Christmas
in
films?
2018, they shot 37 of these damn things.
I couldn't even name.
Are they just Christmas movies?
They're all the same. Yeah. Yeah, and it's apparently real easy to do because they're all the same.
Well, yeah, like, and I mean, the ones that I've watched is like, oh no, girl's lonely, she needs to go to a party. She works too hard, she doesn't have a boyfriend, but she needs to show her parents and family that she has a boyfriend, so she goes on.
Yeah, it's everything
she takes
that's
a random
awful
guy.
About, it's everything that's awful about rom-coms minus the calm, with bad sweaters.
And just everything.
And rom-coms are just the most worthless movie genre, and you know, that there is, that without redemption, and generally get you to root for bad people doing bad things that would get you arrested if you did them in real life.
Yeah.
But these movies, they're so non-threatening in their formulaic nature. It's like going to a franchise burger place. You pretty much know what you're going to experience, and that's what you sought out, and you're going to get it. And you're like, ah, this is the thing I wanted. This is the familiar thing. They even will cast the same actors and actresses in several of these things. And yeah, it often is people whose best days are perhaps behind them.
I distinctly remember watching one that had Sabrina the Teenage Witch in it.
Oh, not Melissa.
Melissa Joan
Hart. Yeah, and
Melissa,
then there was another one that had AC Slater in it from Saved by the Bell.
Are you aware, speaking of Mario Lopez in movies, hold on, I got to get this up because you guys have been Googling and now it is my turn to Google because there is a thing happening that I cannot explain. The Lifetime channel, Lifetime Television for Women, which is basically like made for TV movies about women survived a terrible abusive relationship. And also here's some true crime of women killing their husbands. Christ. That's the Lifetime channel.
Wow, what a delight.
Please, the entire podcast sphere owes its existence to the women, to women listening to true crime.
Yeah, that is a huge chunk of podcasting.
A KFC Lifetime movie with Mario Lopez starring as a sexy Colonel Sanders called A Recipe for Seduction.
Right, Mike, download it right now.
I actually saw the poster for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I saw it on Twitter.
I used to love AC
Slater. And you saw it and you're like, oh, come on, someone's taking the piss with Photoshop.
That is exactly what it was called. A Recipe for Seduction.
Recipe for Seduction.
Okay, yeah, I saw that and I thought, that can't be real.
I assumed it was going to be like just an online video and like a 90 to 300 second long mini movie, just a long commercial, basically, and we're all going to have a good laugh. No, it's longer than that, and it aired on television.
That is crazy. Who's in it with him?
You need more than that? You need,
what?
You need more than
you need
Mario Lopez as a sexy Colonel. Okay, sexy Colonel Sanders is a string of words that should not exist.
I mean,
you know, my mom was in radio in the 60s and 70s, and she actually interviewed Harlan Sanders, I think, more than once. And she described him as both a Southern gentleman and a dirty old man. So to have anybody thinking of Harlan Sanders as sexy is really weird to me.
That's so weird. Yeah. That's clearly when you've got to the point where you're like, I just need money, don't I? Mario Lopez, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair though, if someone said that to me, I said, hey Mike, right, we've got a new movie coming out, what is it?
It's a KFC movie.
Is that what? You mean it's sponsored by KFC? No, no, no. You're playing Colonel Sanders. I'd be like, you know what? Get me free KFC for life. I'll be in on that. I'll be a sexy Colonel Sanders. Why not? I could be like his British equivalent. His weird cousin.
Maybe.
I don't know.
You could be Mr. Wimpy. I think that's as close as you're going to get.
Mr. Wimpy Burger.
Right, there's only about four Wimpy
Burgers.
There's
hardly any Wimpy Burgers now.
I know. That was a deep cut for your side of the audience.
Yeah.
Right. So I can't believe that there's that many films that came out that are solely Christmas movies.
I didn't even know. Like, I can't even.
Why are there two channels for it, though?
Plus one?
I don't know. Maybe there's just so many of them. I don't know why it exists at all. If you were to just Google Hallmark Christmas movie, you would probably see a graphic that's been going around lately of all of the like cover art. I know there's no physical copies of these things anymore, but all of the poster art, and they're all identical. The setting is identical. The people are completely interchangeable. Just they're all white, naturally, just across the board, white Gentiles. Hallmark has been trying to make Hanukkah movies. Because there's no inclusivity, diversity, or representation in these films, like, at all. And speaking as a member of the tribe, we would just as soon they didn't bother. Because they're not doing a very good job. It's a bit like a vegan meat substitute. You know, don't make it try to be meat.
Like vegan,
let it be
vegan
let it
jerky.
Be, let it make a lovely vegetable dish with these lovely vegetables. Don't try to force them into a hamburger patty, you know? So that's kind of what they're doing with these Hanukkah movies. They're not being offensive necessarily. They're just, you got to be near Hollywood at some point. Find a Jew. That's where they all are. You know? Well, that's where half of them are. The other half are in New York. But yeah, find a Jew and ask them. And until then, please stop making Hanukkah movies.
It's funny you should say that, because I met when I was traveling around Europe, I met someone who was American, who was Jewish, and he was from LA.
Well, it's because entertainment was one of the areas that Jews were basically allowed to work in. All of the old medieval prohibitions against Jews owning property, owning businesses, the different kinds of trade they can do, none of that was in force legally, but it all really stuck around culturally for centuries. And it's one of the reasons that so many Jews became songwriters and actually wrote the Christmas carols that we all, speaking about our side, that we all grew up singing. Because I know that, you know, we don't sing all the same Christmas carols. And today I found myself wondering, Away in the Manger has the exact same lyrics on both sides of the pond, completely different melody.
Really?
It's completely different melody.
That's so
weird. And then today I was starting to research it, but I was a bit busy. And apparently it was written by Martin Luther. And I'm like, I really need to get back to this research because this looks like it's going to be interesting as hell.
I assume you don't mean Martin Luther King. I assume you mean Martin Luther. Was he the Bible gentleman?
The guy with the nails, yeah.
Yeah. He translated the Bible.
Into, yeah.
Yeah.
He had some grievances and a hammer. At least I'm thinking it, because it just said Martin Luther, but I'm like, crap, I got to get back to the other thing I'm doing. And I never got back to it. My day has fallen very far behind schedule. So, yeah, because your Away in a Manger is kind of lilty. It sounds a little bit like Come Ye Shepherds, which I only know that song because it was one of the 8 Christmas carols that played on a nonstop loop at the Busch Gardens theme park when I was selling my wares in the German Christmas market. I used to make goat milk soap and skincare products.
Oh, cool.
And so for 5 weeks every year, I got to listen to the same 8 German Christmas carols playing over and over over again. But our Away in the Manger, it's not somber, but it's definitely not, I think the melody's not as nice. Oh. And one thing I'm going to look into just as soon as I have a free moment, were these melodies meant to go together? Were they meant to harmonize? I don't know how they sound together. I really should have researched for it out of my mouth, but
no, that's really interesting.
Why start now? It's the same lyrics, but a completely different melody.
I mean, it's interesting.
Completely different melody.
How they would do that? Because, I mean, the thing is with Christmas carols and Christmas music is my least favorite thing about all of Christmas is Christmas caroling and music. That's generally, the worst thing, like we said about how early do you put on like Christmas decorations and things like that, one of the big hot topics is how early can places play Christmas music. And my general rule is from December 1st, it's free game. Before that, you aggravate me. But certain big supermarkets or shops or department stores, like the Range is a big one, they'll start playing it like 6 weeks before Christmas. And they've got the licensing for like 40 songs, so they'll just play the same 40 Christmas songs.
Yeah, and I am lifelong retail. And I don't mean I'm like a retail manager. I mean, I am frontline cashier customer service retail. And I'm 41 years old, and that's as far as I'm going to get in life, apparently. I was so relieved when I got a job at an Aldi near my house, because there are no speakers.
Oh, yeah, there are no speakers in Aldi, no. Oh, yeah,
they cannot play music at me. I cannot be made to listen to Christmas carols because we got to put the Christmas stuff out November 1st. But I am safe from Mariah Carey and that song.
So do you class the Mariah Carey song as a Christmas carol? Because I wouldn't class that as a Christmas carol.
Well, I mean, it's
carol.
A Christmas cash grab, but it definitely falls under the heading of Christmas music. And I don't know if they still do it, but one of the radio stations here in Richmond would change its format on Thanksgiving Day to be just Christmas music. Oof. Until the day after Christmas. And that's Christ. What they did every year. It was the easy listening station anyway, not a big loss. But yeah, so you'd hear like the modern stuff and the Michael Bublé and things like that. And then you'd hear, you know, like Judy Garland, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and Gene Autry, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, those mid-century classics.
Because there's really
not much. I now try to think, it's like there's the mid-century and then there's the now.
Because for me, Christmas
carols.
There's
kind of this gap in the middle.
Christmas carols for me is like, it's difficult because I don't know if you have these songs. It's like Hark the Herald Angels Sing and A Little Town of Bethlehem and Away in a Manger.
I think a lot of the religious
night.
Ones America will have.
Yeah, no, but I mean.
Yeah, the kind of Victorian religious ones.
That's what I associate as being a Christmas carol, whereas all of the others I associate with being Christmas songs.
I feel
songs.
Like if there's more than one person singing at one time, it's basically a carol. I think the only exception of that is probably it could be Christmas Every Day. I wouldn't say that's a Christmas carol.
But if you go caroling, you wouldn't sing All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Yeah, but that's because it's her singing.
They
that's what
might.
I'm but I think that a carol counts as probably before the turn of the century, and also it has to be at least two people singing it at once. That's kind of, it's maybe because a carol's maybe a group, isn't it? So it's like, you know, when you hear Away in a Manger.
I don't know, is it? Carol definition.
That's literally what I'm doing.
You can both do it, and you see what
a
different...
religious folk song or popular hymn, particularly one associated with Christmas. It doesn't list a minimum number of participants.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I think traditional religious ones are Christmas carols.
Yeah. Now, to go caroling, you definitely need people, because if you're doing that by yourself...
Yeah.
Somebody's going to call the cops. You're going to end up on a list.
I didn't. So it's so weird. Do people Christmas... I'm assuming people Christmas carol in America. Do they go around knocking on people's doors and sing?
Statistically, it has to happen somewhere. I have never in my life seen it.
So I...
But then again, where I live, in the house I've lived in for the last 20 years, we're set back behind a neighborhood... behind the woods,
right?
And I learned a few years ago, I am the witch that the neighborhood parents scare their children with, which was the single greatest thing I ever heard.
That's funny.
And the woman's like, I've got to bring my daughter over, she's grown now. And I'm like, hell yes, bring her over, I want to talk to her, this is great. Because if you guys don't shut up, I'm going to take you in the woods and leave you with the witch. And they'd shut up, and I'm like, this is so cool, I'm the witch of the neighborhood, that's great. So we in 20 years haven't even had a trick-or-treater, which is for sure thing that happens. And I've heard from some British people that you don't like as much that particular coca colonization, which is my favorite term, has taken root over there. That's American culture spreading via capitalism, coca colonization.
Nice. So with caroling, like, I remember I used to do it in primary when I was younger, when I was like 7 or 8, but I experienced Christmas caroling. I can't remember if you were there, Mike, or it might have been somebody else. It might have been my cousin.
Was it the end of the house?
Yeah.
No, I do remember
were
that.
Were you there?
Yeah, but I didn't want to come see.
No, so
caroling.
I lived in Andover, which is a small town in...
No one in England knows where that is, no, let alone Americans.
That's not true. People know where Andover is. That'd be ridiculous.
No,
but
one has any idea.
So I lived in a really small part of Andover. I lived in quite like a poncy, fancy area because I was just renting this house off of this woman. I lived in like a little cottage. And it is the only time in my adult memory that someone has... knocked on the door and sung Christmas carols, and I genuinely did not know what to do. I was just stood there like, ooh, this
like,
is lovely. Am I
or...
supposed to give you something? Like, I don't know what you want me
there.
To do.
Oh, it's got to be that same awkwardness of having happy birthday sung to you. It's like, great, I just get to stand here and smile until you're finished.
Yeah,
I think it's one of the things that you said before, Megan, when we were in the early days of us dating, and I said jokingly, would you like me to serenade you with a song? And you were like, there's nothing I'd like less.
Yeah, that's literally
like, nope,
my worst
absolutely
nightmare.
Absolutely not, because it's just, it's same as happy birthday, same as caroling. It's just, let's just stand here and wait for this person to stop making mouth noises as into their own pleasure. And I hate Christmas caroling. If people want to go Christmas caroling and want to, you know, stand in a square and sing Christmas music at Christmas time, be my guest, because I can walk away. If you come to my door, I will not greet you with smiles. And
well, I'm hoping nobody's doing it this year.
No,
well,
I don't
know.
I mean,
yeah.
Trick-or-treating didn't happen this year either at all.
Yeah, not happening this year. It happens maybe sometimes if it's like a church group or a youth group, and they're also maybe gathering donations for something, maybe. But just people, hey, let's go caroling. Nah, you know, it's just not a thing. But I think, and this is on our list too, that old-fashioned sing-song kind of thing, definitely more British, is my impression. The likelihood of breaking out into a group song seems to be, especially for Christmas stuff, seems to be more of a British thing than an American thing.
It's weird because we watch a lot of...
It seems like it's an upper class thing.
Well, yeah, because we watched a lot of The Crown recently.
Yeah, we've been watching The Crown.
We're like, oh, this is nothing how any of us actually.
They randomly start bursting into song playing the piano, which is something that we definitely don't do.
Princess Margaret, when she's having, like, just before she has some sort of horrendous downer, she ends up getting drunk, smoking cigarettes, and playing piano loads.
Yeah, I have seen a lot of Christmas movies that are American where people have been sat around like a piano and they've started singing. But again, that kind of links to the fact that it's probably a Hallmark movie more than anything.
People don't generally have pianos. They're
very expensive. That's why I mean it's an upper class thing, isn't it?
With English and breaking that into songs, I'd say it's really random. There's no real pattern to it. I don't think I know anyone who sings with their family at Christmas fully. Like, occasionally if a song comes on and a little kid starts dancing to it or something, everyone may sing a little bit of it, but like someone picking up
I think you're more likely to do it when you have small kids.
Yeah.
Like, I think the family singing the Christmas carols, that's more of a childhood thing, because when we would be in the car at Christmas time, we would absolutely all sing together. We would do the 12 Days of Christmas, and the line 5 gold rings was reserved for my father's baritone, and he would just really ham it up doing the 5 gold rings, and then the girls would all jump back in for the rest of it. So maybe it's just kids and TV and movies that are making us think that it's a thing.
Or just people that are musically talented as well.
Yeah, well, people, generally speaking, if you're at a gathering and someone picks up an instrument unprovoked, they're a douchebag. Generally speaking, it's like, generally. I've been to, more so my youth, but the amount of parties I've been to or hosted, and someone brings a guitar, and you're all like,
it's the guy with the guitar.
Yeah, and it gets like 11
o'clock.
He's
normally got dreadlocks.
Yeah, 11, dreadlocks are at least really, really long hair, and then it gets to like 11 o'clock PM, and then they start singing a song that no one wants to hear, and it's like, And that seems at Christmas. If someone pulled out an acoustic guitar and say, let's all sing Christmas carols, I'd be like, I'm going elsewhere. Yeah, not a fan of that. I'm not sure regarding other Christmassy things. I was just going to say, are there the day after Christmas? We call it Boxing Day. Do you guys call it Boxing Day?
No, it's Returns Day. It's not actually called that, but that's just the day you don't want to be working customer service. Because everybody and their sainted brother has gathered up all the shit they didn't want and is trying to return it all at the same time. There really isn't any cultural pastiche to the day after Christmas. It's just, it starts that week of nobody is going to accomplish anything between Christmas and New Year's, which for whatever reason in my life, I always have some major project or life change that I really need to work on, and I need other people to go back to the office, please. You know, you don't need to take these 10 days off. That's my personal problem.
Also, your mic sounds a bit odd. Every word you've just ended with sounded kind of bubbly.
Oh, I think my computer is struggling because I'm running out of disk space.
Ah, that might be why. But we are basically we're nearing the end now. Not that I specifically wanted it to end because I'm having a great old time talking to you about Christmas and whatnot. But so because of your mic stuff, if we vaguely wrap up, are there any other sort of, because we can always do this again like next year, not Christmassy, we can just do like stuff about Americanisms and whatnot because it's a lot of fun. Is there anything else Christmas related that we haven't touched that you want to ask us before we head out?
John Lewis ads. There's actually two things if I can. There's two things I want to get into.
Yeah.
John Lewis ads. We made our lists and then intentionally did not look up these answers ourselves. What kind of a shop is John Lewis?
John Lewis is a department store.
Yeah, so okay. Also your
That's
mic thing's
kind of,
fine
I got that vibe.
High class department. Like,
I'm trying to think of what I could compare it to. Macy's? But I think, is Macy's fancy?
Fancier than me, not fancy enough for some.
Yeah, well, John Lewis is probably top end, apart from, like, Harrods, which is...
Yeah, I would say John Lewis is kind of an equivalent to Macy's.
Okay, so we've... It almost as a way to compare it in a sense of equivalent of, like, supermarkets, because there's a place called Marks & Spencer's, which is pretty much always in John Lewis's for some reason, okay? So Asda is basically Walmart. That's all... You've got, like, Aldi and Asda are sort of near the bottom of the, air quotes, hierarchy of supermarkets. And then you've got... Tesco, and then Sainsbury's, and then above that you've got M&S, which is that and Waitrose are the two top tier supermarkets where everything's organic and free range and expensive and fancy and whatever. John Lewis is
attached to them.
I'd say apart from Harrods, which I think there's only about three of in England, and they're the kind of places that you can only shop if you're like a
Harrods is crazy expensive. That's
like a pair of shoes is like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds, if not thousands. So aside from that, John Lewis is like, I'd say, dead middle class department store, basically as high as you can go, but expensive enough so that everyone could probably just about afford to shop there, but unless you've got a lot of money you wouldn't go there. And have you seen some of the adverts that we have?
I don't know. I kind of disagree. I don't think John Lewis is super expensive. I think for some things it is. I think it's like a mid-range. It's more towards the top tier.
Yeah, but no one shops there as a standard unless you've got a good amount of money. That's what, like, no one who's on like a lower income ever goes to John Lewis.
I bought my blender from John Lewis.
You're not lower income, Megan. Neither of us are lower income, I'm afraid. We both are fairly well
anyway, traveled. John Lewis always release a Christmas advert and people go nuts for them.
Megan thinks
well, yeah,
so
and those will make their way across via social media, which apparently the real meaning of Christmas is crying because they want to make people cry. Yeah.
They're hella emotional. It's basically how I feel if I ever buy anyone a gift at John Lewis. Just come out crying. So, regardless of what Megan thinks, fancy pants over here.
I'm not fancy pants.
thinking that you're poor, and you're like, no one ever goes to John Lewis. Megan, no, they don't. No one we know goes to John Lewis unless they're over 40.
The last one I can remember was like the bear sleeping through Christmas, and so all the animals like did Christmas for it. The bear or something.
That was the one. Yeah, that was the one that had Lily Allen singing a song for it, wasn't it? I think so. I know the advert you're talking about.
What was the other question you had about stuff? I want to answer
one of yours, and then we're going to circle back around to one of these broad explanation ones, because you have on your list, are Christmas cards popular in America as they are in Britain? Now, granted, I don't know what benchmark I'm measuring them against, but they are becoming less popular with each passing year, just as everything in life is more electronic and not paper-based. Mm-hmm. I haven't sent them in 15 years. I expect I will get like 5 this year, maybe, and 2 or 3 of them will be from... Well, I got one from my vet, you know, and I felt so bad for all... like, they made everybody in the office sign it. I'm like, oh my God, how many cards did you poor girls have to sign? And then one from my aunt, who includes her little index card-sized summary of her year. I'm like, oh, she's learning Swedish. That's nice. We don't even have enough to bother displaying. We get so few of them anymore. And I think just as all paper media falls out of fashion, Christmas cards are going with it.
At school,
I think
school,
that's the same here, too.
When we were at school, which was... 10 years ago we graduated school, so it's probably about 15 years ago or so. I remember most kids would write out 30 odd Christmas cards and everyone would give them to everyone. It was quite pointless.
I think it was more of a primary school thing than a secondary school
thing.
Yeah,
so in America...
That sounds like Valentine's Day. We do that in Valentine's Day where you've got to bring Valentine's cards for the whole class.
You have to bring Valentine's...
I don't know why.
When you're in young school.
Yeah, when you're like seven. It's...
Before you understand what love it is.
No, I understand the concept, Mike. That's just so odd. The whole point of Valentine's Day is giving a card to the
person you fancy,
isn't it? It's
supposed to be romantic love. I think it's just like a pointless busy work day so the teacher can get some desk work done. Because you sometimes make like a little mailbox out of construction paper, and then you go around, everybody goes around to everybody else's desks and puts the... And they're not proper cards. They're like the size of a credit card, usually these little things that come 50 to a pack. Sometimes they might have a lollipop stuck in them, but you just, you know, go around. It'll have Batman on it, for Christ's sake. You know, it's not really romantic, but it's just this thing we do because it seems like we've always done it.
I see. Yeah, we definitely don't do that.
Yeah, we don't do that.
Nah. The thing I would like you to do another broad explanation of, like you did with the Christmas crackers, something else that is completely foreign to the American experience. Please tell my listeners, what the hell is panto?
Pantomimes.
I hate
yes!
pantomimes so
I get
much.
To watch a pantomime on Friday, and I'm
God.
So excited.
Right, how about, right, You explain,
because if you say pantomime to an American, we're thinking you mean a mime, like you're
odd.
Acting something out without words. That's what pantomime means here. But it's like a whole theatrical show, right?
Yeah.
You guys are lucky over there. So what we're gonna do? Megan's gonna explain what pantomime is, and then I'm gonna explain what pantomime is. They're gonna be slightly different things because I love this idea, and Megan really likes them.
I'm in the middle. I loved pantomimes when I was younger. As I've grown older, I don't like them so much because they're more of a thing
terrible.
For children to enjoy.
Terrible.
Basically, what pantomimes are is it's normally a like fairy tale kind of story, so like Jack and the Beanstalk or like
Peter Pan,
Aladdin, that
Cinderella.
Kind of thing, Cinderella.
Basically any Disney movie,
yeah,
before like the 70s.
But it's turned into essentially kind of like an interactive play, and they get audience participation. So the main female protagonist that is like normally, so there's always going to be the love story between the female and the male. Huh?
Compare it to Hairspray.
What? No.
Well, that's how I
don't want to compare it to Hairspray. Let me. I thought I was telling this story.
I'm sorry,
and you're interrupting my explanation.
It sounds like a more complex narrative because, as far as I knew, it also involves two guys in a horse costume.
Yeah, so.
Because I keep hearing references to panto horses.
Yeah, so normally there's obviously the main story, and then there's always going to be a man dressed as a woman. Characteristically in a panto, because that's funny. So it's just a bit of silliness. It's for children to get involved. So the villain will come out onto the stage and they'll be like, oh no, where's the villain? And then the whole audience will be like, he's behind you. And then he'll turn around and the villain will have disappeared, and then he'll turn around and then we'll be like, he's behind you.
Okay, now
this does sound like it's for children.
It is very much for children.
Oh, even when I was a child, I hated it. So, yeah, my basic version of it is essentially the same. It's a story you've heard a billion times. They rewrite it and always make it worse. The main person is always a man dressed up as a woman, but clearly not trying to look like a woman. And then there's constant jokes throughout the whole thing about the fact that the woman looks like a man, which is apparently funny.
Oh,
but
and
also
they and no, no, no.
Oh, wait, they fall. Someone always falls in love with them. Normally the bad guy. Normally he goes, oh my god, that woman, she's enchanting. What is her?
And normally the people from the pantomime are people that like used to be in soap operas.
Yes,
they're people that used to be on television.
Like there's one or two main people who are famous-ish, and they normally one guy is normally someone who's in like a old TV show, and now he's playing the woman. Version. Like the fairy godmother is always a man.
The fairy godmother is always,
yeah, always
a man.
Yeah. There's normally all the sets are often quite more so. They used to be terrible. Now they're just okay, but they're not high production things. It's a lot of audience participation, as Megan said. But a lot of the time, it's the baddie who will yell out to the crowd, "Oh, I'm gonna get them and I'm gonna win." And then some will yell out, and they'll boo and sis, and then hiss, and then someone, the goodie on the stage, will go, "Oh no, he wasn't." And then the crowd will yell that with them, and then the baddie will go, "Oh yes, I did. Oh no," and it does that for like five.
It does
times.
Go on for quite a while.
Oh my god! And
but
it's
then
just...
at the end, they normally get kids to come up on stage and they do something fun so that the kids can win prizes. But, and I have been one of those kids before.
That's why she likes it, and I don't, because I'm not. I haven't been bribed.
Mike was
by
neglected
this.
And didn't
no,
get to go
I've
on
been
stage.
On stage. I just hate.
He's
it.
Bitter.
Yes, bear.
The panto horse, though, yeah, it's basically just...
Oh, yeah, the panto horse.
It's always... The thing is, the pantomime is... I guess it used to be funny before, you know, the last five decades of comedy existed.
I think it has reduced quite considerably in the past few years.
Because people realise it sucks. The thing is that it's basically... If people watch... Like, Monty Python is almost a good reference point. For people who like Monty Python, if you get every Monty Python joke that doesn't land... You put that in a stage performance with children participation, men dressed as women, and rewriting old stories to make them slightly worse. Generally, that's kind of what you've got. Also, in the low budget, that's why the pantomime horse.
They are
comes
normally
in,
fairly low budget
because
they're
always just. There's almost like three tiers of theatre. You've got like the proper high tier theatre, then you've got kind of mid range. The low ones, that's where all pantomimes play, except the one or two travelling ones. The big ones.
But it is a specific Christmas thing. You don't get pantomimes at any other point in the year. Do you?
Yes, unfortunately.
Do you?
Yeah, I see billboards at them all the time. They're not as common. There's normally
I've never ever seen a pantomime.
There's normally like one or two. They are for kids, just to clarify, but a lot of kids will hate them because they're just cheesy, self-referencing, and the jokes are really lame, and they're normally not written really well. They're not written by, you know, your Andrew Lloyd Webbers of theatre, even though I have questions about him anyway, but you don't...
Yeah, let's shoot a little higher than that.
Yeah, Andrew Lloyd Webber is a poor example.
It's not Mel Brooks.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just... They're really, really, really cheesy, and yeah, they mainly come out at Christmas, and you know, kids, schools almost always play them because they're really easy to put together because they're so cheesy.
Well, normally people do school trips to go to the panto. This year, obviously, it's slightly different because of COVID, but we're streaming one. So on Friday for year 7 and 8, they are streaming a pantomime. And because I'm teaching year 7 and 8, I have to show them it to them. So I'm very excited because I get to watch the panto.
And she'll come home and tell you all
of. And I'm going to do all of the jokes. Detail. I'm basically going to reenact the entire pantomime just for Mike.
Well, the thing is I don't. I've been getting more into theatre since I've been dating you because you really love, you know, musicals and stuff. And I'm. Who's that famous? Paul O'Grady.
Paul O'Grady is. I can never remember his drag name. But I've seen him as dressed in his drag.
Yeah, because he's a very famous
for
drag
pantomimes. Yeah.
I think. Am I right in thinking this, Moxie? Is it kind of come from where? In when theatre sort of started, let's say Shakespearean-ish times, women were never allowed to act because they just weren't because of rights and stuff. So men would play women's roles because there were no women, essentially. And then
you'd get your most attractive teenage boy to play the heroine. I think it was because they assumed women probably couldn't handle the mental strain of it, because that's usually why women would be precluded from things. Like, oh, she can't possibly do math. Singular. I'm going to stress that. We'll get into our debate of maths versus sport.
It gets even worse when it goes into Spanish, because you have to make all of the adjectives agree with the word maths. So when you're saying, I like maths, it'll be, I like the maths because they are fun.
Now I'm going to have to like ask someone from America who learns Spanish, not a native bilingual person, if they learn it in a plural or a singular, because of course we use singular math to refer to any and all math collectively or individually. Yeah. And then on the flip side, we say sports, plural, unless we're talking about a specific sport, whereas in British English, sport can mean the entire pantheon of all types of sports.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't call...
We're kind of reversed on that.
Yeah, we call it... When we're in school, we don't have sport or sports, we have PE.
Physical education.
That's what.
Yeah, well, no, I'm talking about like not
yeah,
gym
we're talking
class,
about sport.
But sports.
Oh, just in general sports.
Yeah, the general collective of sport.
Ours
is singular, theirs is plural.
I don't think I mean. I so rarely talk about sport that I guess.
me too.
Wonderful. I was just looking at pantomime stuff to see if I can find a Michael Ballin pantomime. I mean, I feel like we could talk about this forever, but it is getting a bit later now.
End. you were shooting for us to stop on the hour. It's 33 past.
No, it was more just like a general goal, because obviously here it's like 10:30 p.m. and Megan's got work tomorrow.
I do have work tomorrow, so I need
to
go
to
bed
with kids, whereas I'm here homeworking. So yeah, exciting stuff.
So he'll just be sitting back in his pajama bottoms with his feet on the coffee table, laughing at you.
Yeah, literally.
More or less. I mean, I do get backache and neckache now, so we're looking at improving the home office, which is currently just a sofa and a lap tray, but it's wonderful. Do you want people to know where people find you, Megan?
I mean, if people are interested in finding me on social media, you can follow me on Instagram at gritsgetsfit, and it's where I track my weight and health journey.
And that's GRITTS, grits gets fit. I just want to spell
I'm glad
that
you clarified case. That because we would spell grits differently.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's a different type of food.
Oh,
it's a type of food. Okay. We're back to it. I didn't know it was a food. I thought maybe it was a short version of your last name.
It is a short version of my last name. That is the case.
What kind of food?
Yeah, and
grits.
To sum up grits very quickly, it's sort of like the country cousin of polenta.
Oh.
Yeah.
Megan loves polenta.
I do like polenta.
I only found out what polenta was literally recently. Awesome, cool. Well, with that fun fact out of the way, the fun fact about me. I have a podcast called Genuine Chits Chat, and I have honest conversations with interesting people, and the very interesting Moxie LaBouche has been on the show before, so you can go check that out as well in the magic back catalogue of episodes. And you can find me on social media at Genuine Chits Chat. That's on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook. And if you really like Star Wars, I have a Star Wars podcast called Star Wars Comics in Canon, and that is found on the feed of Comics in Motion. New episodes of Genuine Chit Chat are out on Sundays, and new episodes of Star Wars Comics in Canon are out on Saturdays.
Good plug. Yeah, we definitely need to do this like every 6 months or so.
Yeah, we just watch loads and loads, because we watch lots of American content and you watch like a bit of UK content, and we just, yeah, I mean, because you mentioned Blackadder already. I bloody love Blackadder. I want to clarify.
I was just rewatching it this week, because I'll just put it on and I don't even need to look because I have it, the entire thing memorized.
Yeah, I mean, season one is basically just like, have you ever seen Mr. Bean? I don't know if that's in America. The guy who plays Mr. Bean's
worldwide. Okay,
yeah, Mr. Bean is famous.
Move over Pitbull, because Mr. Bean is Mr. Worldwide. There you go. Well, it has been another fabulous time talking. Megan, it was great getting to virtually meet you and getting all that extra insight from different parts of Europe. So that was like a bonus.
Yeah. I mean, it's been, obviously, it was lovely.
Yeah, it was lovely meeting you.
And yeah, we'll definitely have to sort this out again midway through the year or something next year, or whenever, springtime or something, or have another thing. We'll just keep doing this until we've run out of things to ask each other.
There's going
to
be so many things.
I'm pretty sure we'll find enough to compare and contrast. We'll find more things to compare and contrast. And next year we can debate which one's better, Merry Christmas or Happy Christmas.
I mean,
Merry Christmas.
I was going to say Merry Christmas.
Oh, good. I won. Yay.
Wonderful. Well, cool. Well, and what we'll do, just to clarify as well, Boxy, with editing and whatnot, did you want to do it separately, or did you want me to do it and ping it over to you? What's your sort of...
No, why don't we each edit it for our own show? So I'll send you my half, you send me your half, and then you do what's good for your feed, and I'll do what's good for my feed.
Yeah, no worries at all. You can edit out all of your swearing.
I can't help it.
We were good.
Like, legitimately,
yeah,
I can't help
good.
It.
We were good and you weren't. That's the funniest part. I said to Megan, okay, you can swear a bit, but try not to swear. And then Moxie was the one swearing on her own show that doesn't allow it.
It was just a bit, and we can fix it in post, which I'm allowed to say because I'm the one that fixes it in post. Okay, well, on that fabulous note, why don't we actually wrap it up? This is a hell of a Jewish goodbye we're having here. And I will talk to you guys, hopefully, sometime later.
Yeah, definitely. We'll speak to you guys. We'll speak to you soon, Moxie.
Bye.
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 And that's where we run out of ideas, at least for today. I don't really have much of a closer for the show because I didn't have much of an opener, but suffice it to say, thanks for spending part of your day with me, and stay safe.